Yeah, hey, and welcome back to the Seabase channel. And it's once more about Corona, but this time it's about the Corona apps and the data protection in decentralized Corona apps. And Kirsten and Rainer will do a talk about looking beyond the code. As always, you can ask questions in the chat, which we will answer later on. And now have fun and lots of information with Rainer and Kirsten. Go ahead.
Thanks a lot. So welcome to our talk, Data Protection of Decentralized Corona Apps, Looking Beyond the Code. This is a talk specifically about data protection and not so much about IT security, as we have heard a lot of interesting talks before. And yes, so this is the schedule for today. And we will start with the introduction of us. And Kirsten maybe can say a few words about yourself.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us today. My name is Kirsten. I'm a data protection expert and I work for a German DPA. I have a legal background. I tweet under privacy.de and I was part of the team for a German exposure notification app data protection impact assessment draft in April. And today I will present my private opinion. Thank you.
My name is Rainer Rehak. I have a background in computer science and philosophy. I am a researcher at the Weizmann Institute for the Networked Society. I'm active at the Forum Computer Professionals for Peace and Social Responsibility. And my fields of interest are data protection and IT security, as well as government hacking. And I was part of the team together with Kirsten to create the Data Protection Impact Assessment in April. And now we will have a short overview about the talk.
Yes, first we will start with what is data protection? Quite important question when talking about data protection to understand the basic subject. And then we will learn some details about the German Corona app, which is actually an exposure notification app. We will learn a bit about what is a data protection impact assessment, our findings, and what was missing in the official data protection impact assessment. And finally, we will have some time for open questions. But first, let us start with what is data protection? Rainer.
So first, we would like to differentiate with the question, what is data protection, between data protection law, and IT security. Data protection itself is a research area in social science. The idea there, or the goal, is to avoid unwanted consequences of data processing. Data protection law is the legal field that tries to implement that. But it's the legal form of it. And we all know sometimes the laws don't really protect what they're intended to protect. So there's a difference between data protection and data protection law. And the third thing that needs to be differentiated is IT security, which is a research area in computer science, which is mainly about confidentiality, integrity, and availability of data and services. And we see here there's already a differentiation, because the data protection itself protects the people that are subject to data processing, whereas IT security protects the data and systems of the people operating the systems. So we already see there's a first difference. And the current data protection law is the EU GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, and it protects the fundamental rights of people. See Article 1, I've put it out there. The regulation lays down rules relating to the protection of natural persons, and it protects the fundamental rights and freedoms of natural persons. And generally data protection law, in the GDPR, the main questions are the processing itself, the purpose, the risks involved, and who is the controller, so who's responsible, and such things. And one thing that needs to be mentioned, especially when we talk about the any kind of processing, is questions of proportionality, suitability, and necessity. So for all data protection processes, it's important to ask, is this data processing suitable to reach the aim? So is there a causal relationship? We all know that there are certain applications where that are intended to reach a certain goal, but we, maybe as tech people, or tech people, might not all be tech people listening or watching here, sometimes it's just not suitable. So from the perspective of data protection, this would then not be a legal processing if it doesn't causally relate to the aim. The necessity is there any less intrusive measure to reach the same goal? Then the proposed one is not allowed, because less infringing one or less intrusive one would be available. And finally, the proportionality. So the goals that can be reached compared to the rights infringed, that needs to be put in context and in relation. And this kind of understanding or this kind of evaluation has to be done for all processing. So right now we see that's the first problem with the Corona, with the exposure notification being done by the Corona One apps. We don't really know how well it actually works, which in effect makes it difficult to make this kind of evaluation. But if we leave this a little bit away, it's still very interesting, and this is what we will continue to do now, is to evaluate the risk of the actual usage. And there's also a specific tool, so it's not like people sitting around the table and just thinking about the risks. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. All right. Oh. Is that okay again? All right. So I feel a bit like an aeroplane that has been refueled in mid-flight. Okay. So should I... Okay. Should I continue or... Okay, maybe we'll probably. We'll skip this probably in the recording then. So, right now, I could sing the Jeopardy melody. There we are. Okay. Wow, this was quick. Should I continue now? Okay. All right. So, as I said, it's necessary to analyze all this processing. And for this kind of analysis, there's a specific tool in the GDPR, which we will hear about later by Kirsten. But first, before we talk about the tool, we want to talk about the Corona app itself, just to outline the general functionality for everyone who's not familiar. This will be rather quick. But it's important for people who are not constantly dealing with the topic. So what's the Corona One app? It's a voluntary transnational Bluetooth low energy proximity tracing. It's the same technology that's being used by, for example, the app in Ireland, in Japan, or in Italy, etc. The purpose of this app is to break infection chains by warning possible infectious exposures. So it tries to trace contacts between people, and if one of the persons is tested positively, then the second one, so the contact, can be warned for self quarantining. The whole system, although we are always talking about the Corona app, it consists of an app and a server, which is important looking at it from the data protection data protection perspective. And there are more things, but because of time, we're not focusing on this. Within the app, there are two buckets, like two, let's say, storages. One bucket is for the Bluetooth beacons that are being sent by each app. And one of the buckets is for the Bluetooth beacons received by other apps. Those Bluetooth beacons are, let's say, pseudo-random and they change, but this should not be the topic right now. And the interesting aspect is upon a positive test of one person, the Bluetooth beacons that have been sent in this one bucket are uploaded to the server. And then all the other apps are regularly downloading all those beacons from the server, and they can check with their second bucket if they have seen any of the infected buckets. So that's kind of the idea. So the warning is being calculated decentrally on the apps, on the mobile phones themselves. And if there's a warning, so if it detects you have been close to someone who has been later tested positive, then you should self-quarantine. That's the basic idea. And as we see, this is a, let's say, transnational effort for contact tracing. This is a new technology, and it's just difficult to assess this. And as I've mentioned before, there is a tool to do this in a structured way. So now Kirsten will tell us what a data protection impact assessment is and what we can do with this.
Thank you. The data protection impact assessment is a legal requirement resulting from Article 35 of the General Data Protection Regulation, which describes in which situation a data protection impact assessment must be conducted, and also the obligations a controller has to comply with whenever a data protection impact assessment becomes necessary and needs to be conducted prior to processing. To assess the impact of fundamental rights of new types of processing, technologies, large amount of data or processing on a large scale of special categories like health data as collected via the exposure notification apps. The aim of a DPR, what we call it as an abbreviation, is to aim to detect problematic collection and linkage of information and to prevent them by implementing appropriate measures or to prevent the processing as such if it bears the risk of the resulting in profiling and other high risks for fundamental rights of natural persons. So profiling and its consequences constitutes grim infringements of fundamental rights, and therefore it is quite important to find all kinds of processing that may lead to such a profiling and to such risks, of course. And to allocate these risks properly, it is important not only to focus on the app, but to focus on the whole process. So including the interfaces, of course, that an app uses, but also the processing operations that are very closely connected and that only give sense to having such a notification app at all. And the main problem with the official German data protection impact assessment was that it basically focuses on the app and the server and leaves out very important aspects of the processing. And that, for example, is the Google Apple exposure notification. And we still, up to this day, don't know exactly what is going on when this feature is being included and used in the app. So this is quite a shortcoming. Another main focus of a data protection impact assessment is that a controller may also be the main attacker and not only third persons or external persons that may attack the processing operation. So when you conduct a data protection impact assessment, you always have to focus on, you know, does the controller actually need this kind of data? Is it necessary? And does he have in place the appropriate technical and organizational measures to ensure that he's only processing what he's actually needs to follow and to conclude the main objectives of the processing. Actually, there are not many data protection impact assessments around so far. And as a consequence, in Germany, there was, or I don't know if it, what was the consequence, but shortly before the Corona app was being published, it was clear that there was no public data protection impact assessment and that data subject had not been included in the process of the assessment, which is a prerequisite from Article 35. So we decided in April to go on and analyze what was known at that time about the app, and provide what you might call a draft of a data protection impact assessment, and which then actually served as a background for the official impact assessment done by the government as being the controller of the whole processing. Our findings in that data protection assessment was that there is quite a difference in terms of voluntariness when you consider, you know, voluntary using an app under different preconditions, and also the question of voluntariness in terms of the legal basis, because voluntary doesn't necessarily mean consent as a legal basis, which is one of the legal basis that is provided by the GDPR and which could be used. But there's also the option of a voluntary use based on a specific law. And this would have a number of positive consequences, as opposed to consent being the legal basis. Because according to a data protection law, legal basis, which is always required when you process personal data, we found that consent is not an appropriate legal basis, because it requires you to be to consent freely in an informed way, That were conditions, requirements that would have to be, or still have to be met by each and every individual user in order to be a legally valid consent. And this, as you can guess, is quite a difficult task to make sure that every user of the app actually chooses to use it freely and informed. So it would have been much better if the government would have decided to provide a specific law for the voluntary use, and also to put down the purposes, specify the purposes, and center them on contact tracing exclusively, and to preclude other uses, such as, you know, using the app as an entrance token for supermarkets, for example, concerts, workplaces, and so on. And actually, today we see the same discussion now concerning the vaccination, where also we find that, you know, having already received the vaccine may be used as an entrance token. And therefore, we believe also for the Corona One app that a law should have been in place to govern this. It also could have actually worked for, excuse me, much higher acceptance and proper usage of the app. Well, and another one of our big findings, and this is something that has always been discussed in public also, and is whether the question whether the app is working on an anonymous basis. And in our data protection impact assessment, we show that the app indeed processes personal health data, and this that generally no data on a personally used smartphone is anonymous. So we always have to deal with data protection issues in this regard, and we shouldn't be talking about an anonymous use of the app. And that's basically why in data protection, we cannot only look at the code used for such a processing, but we have to take the whole processing context into consideration. Rainer, how about anonymization?
Yes, I will take on with the last 2 points. That we now have seen that the app itself is not anonymous, it doesn't mean that parts of the data at within parts of the processing can be anonymized. So the whole idea here is as long as the data is on the mobile phones, it is personal data. Well, you can imagine if I can read out all those tokens and then I can compare them with the with those tokens maybe saved on the server, I could theoretically make a combination and then say who's if the phone I took from someone, if that person is actually infected or not. So that shows that the data connection is there. But this doesn't mean that on the way of uploading those Bluetooth beacons to the server, it would not be possible to anonymize that. But this is a difficult process. It is possible that those personal data on the phones is being uploaded and goes through an anonymization process and then is anonymous on the server. So this is exactly the data protection view, where you would say there is a part of the process where the same data, which is personal data on the phone, it is anonymous data when it's on the server. But the process, how it gets there, is very, very important. You might think now, well, if you upload those, well, after you have a positive test and then you upload via the app your Bluetooth beacons to the server, of course the server receives it and has your IP address. So by this point, it's of course possible to connect via IP address, and IP address is personal data, those uploaded beacons to an individual. So what does Telecom and SAP say at this point? And what they say in the data protection impact assessment is, for an indefinitely small amount of time, we do have this connection, but we actually don't save it. Trust us, we don't save it. And here we see again, there's the main difference. If you see the controller is the attacker, then of course you should not trust the attacker saying, well, of course I'm not saving this. So that's the main problem. But of course, this risk can be mitigated, but it should be mitigated. One way we are suggesting in the data protection impact assessment would be to say, well, maybe you have this the server who stores it, it is within a network, but the entrance node to the network is operated by a different organization, and the main task this other organization has is to strip the IP addresses and then forward the data to the servers of, let's say, the RKI. So this would be an organizational solution. This is not a technical solution, but it still is a protection for the data subjects. And that's why, hence the talk, this you can't really see this in the code, because this would be part of the network design. And there we see we always have to look at the whole processing. And at the same time, it would be nice, for example, as a protection measure, to have a law that forbids law enforcement or intelligence agencies going to those organizations to say, well, could you just keep those logs on for a short time because we need this information for whatever reason. So it would be a good idea to have a law that prohibits this kind of change of purpose. So there we see that it is possible to do anonymization of those Bluetooth beacons while they're uploaded, but it has to be done properly and should not be, as in the official data protection impact assessment, brushed away by saying, well, we just don't save this information. You know, we all know mistakes happen. That's the least dangerous scenario we can see. Malintent will be something else. And the last point that we found is, as Kirsten already mentioned a little bit, the exposure notification framework and the relation to Apple and Google. Of course, we would know that's a really, really crucial aspect, and we would not say you should not use it, but it should be honestly stated that there is a risk, and this risk has to be mitigated. The official data protection impact assessment says, well, we can't access the source code, so it should not be, so that because it's not solvable, it's not a problem. No, the task of an impact assessment would be to say there is a risk, and because of closed source code at this point, it's not possible to mitigate this risk. So it's okay if this cannot be solved, but it should be stated as that. And that's a big problem. If we just say, yeah, everything is like it is, and so we can't change it, and so everything is all right, then why do we do data protection, right? And it would be certainly possible to ask, maybe data protection agencies should be able to audit the code of Apple and Google, or maybe it would be possible to find other ways. And since we spent several $10 million on this app, it's frankly quite surprising that the team about the MicroG project presented a free implementation of the ENF, at least for Android, and suddenly people without any Google connection can use it on their Android phones. And I was just thinking, okay, if this is one, if they would understand how crucial this role is, at least you could rescue the Android users, you know, in this aspect. But there are many other ways as well how to do it. But this would be a consequence if you would take data protection really seriously. And this is not some fancy magic. This is just data protection done seriously. Right. Okay. So maybe at this point, props to the MicroG project, and maybe apart from our data protection impact assessment, donate to those guys to actually make this app better and more usable and more broadly usable to people. Okay. Now Kirsten will continue with some of the open questions.
Yes, thanks. Well, apart from technological issues, proportionality of processing, we believe should still or again be discussed. You know, what is the added value of the app for contract tracing? We don't know up to this point. It seems still an experiment. If we look at other countries, especially in the Asia Pacific area, we see that contract tracing by an app has actually not been a major tool to fight the pandemic. We should take a closer look at the side effects of surveillance habituation of the populations to a surveillance tool. I believe this is a real big problem, which hasn't been considered at all. You know, using a smartphone to being, you know, traced and to have you know, to know that somebody's looking over your shoulder and whom you are meeting, even though it seems to be on a beacon in a beacon kind of way. It's still something that affects your brain, and the fact that other smartphone apps, you know, this is always an argument or something that's brought forward, that smartphone apps illegally spy on users does not justify that this app does for the purpose of contract tracing. It's not a no-go, but we believe that proportionality has to be very carefully considered, and that it has not been done properly so far. Well, this is from my side.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'll just take on the next points. Maybe just one comment, right? When we refer to the corona approach in countries like Taiwan, which is not the mega surveillance state. It's a democratic country, so they don't even have an app, right? So this is okay. But coming back, so and even if we now we have the app and now we all want to see it flourish, the question is why is the development still so deficitary or so deficit? Where is the functionality about the crowd notifier? The draft is already there. The source code is nearly written. So to have another data field, which is a crowd. So whenever you go to a restaurant, you could maybe scan a QR code. There's a possible way of actually implementing this in a data protection friendly way. Why is the micro G approach not gotten part of the official app? So once it finds you don't have Google or anything installed, then it will be using this this functionality. So you know, where did all the millions go? And the other point is still, as mentioned before, where are the anonymous uploads? Why isn't that done properly? If it could be solved or at least mitigated by some more or less simple network configuration. And finally, where is the law? Again, that prohibits any other use of the data. And finally, we would like to close with the mentioning that this exposure notification can also be seen by a tech-based distraction from those societal problems that lie below. We have too little testing, we lack staff and health agencies and hospitals, we have bad political rules. So if people stick to the rules that are being given out, then we're still in the catastrophe, and the result right now is, let's say, the head of the Robert Koch Institute just praying to people they should do other things. And I'm just asking, well, if people stick to the rules and it's still all going into the catastrophe, then the rules are just bad. Praying shouldn't be part of a political strategy. The reporting infrastructure is still not fully in place. We have lack of checks for quarantine people after traveling or during quarantine. So all those things, I think, have to be kept in mind. Especially when the discussion comes again, when some people who know nothing about data protection start screaming that we should loosen data protection. First, they don't understand anything about the data protection, and second, they obviously don't understand anything about the problem we're trying to solve here and the societal and political background. So this is usually the point we'd like to close with. If you want to use technology for your societal problems, you have not understood technology and you have not understood society. Okay, thanks a lot. And now we're here for questions and maybe remarks if you want. Some links.
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much, Kirsten and Rainer, for this talk. I guess the Corona app will follow us through the next year.
Will certainly follow me.
So you think there'll be major changes made, or you think there's only small adjustments to be made? What's your guess? What's your wish? Mm-hmm. What's your shout out to the programmers and users?
Kirsten, maybe you want to answer first?
Well, I think it's awfully quiet around at least the German notification app. I would have supposed that they would have put much more efforts into making this app more usable, user friendly, solving some of the irritation that pop up occasionally, and also look into the privacy issues a bit more to gain more trust and to gain more acceptance. How about you, Rainer?
Yeah, well, I think I would expect to see only small steps, because to me it seems that actually Telekom and SAP took the chance, and I don't know if the people who negotiated those deals, if they did not put in any more developments. So I guess in a normal economic thinking, it would be normal that Telekom and SAP now just say, well, if you want more functions, well, you have to take another contract and we know how much you need it. So I think we only see small steps. I mean, the revolution that has been rolled out right now is a diary where you can write down when you have met someone. I don't know. So I think I think we see small steps, but I think there are many good ideas already floating around. And I hope to see them there. I don't know, maybe we have to rely on the open source and free software community to maybe to implement that. I don't know, maybe there will be a fork. No idea.
All right, there's no questions in the chat right now, but anything else you want to say to our viewers? Or
Everyone should stay as healthy as possible. I would probably say, when we discuss about those apps and about those technical solutions, I think it's always important to see that you can criticize something without being totally against it. So even within our group of the six, researchers who built this data protection impact assessment, we didn't have the same opinion about all those things. So I can say the app should be much better and there are major deficits still going on and I'm still using it. So I think it's not impossible to have exactly this opinion. Maybe other people might criticize it and not use it. So I think this differentiated approach, I think, is very important because many of the problems that we're trying to solve right now, the lacking staff in the health environment or in the health agencies or in the hospitals, this is nothing we can solve within 2 months now. So maybe the app can be one small part and it is possible to say in this emergency moment, it might be an okay idea, and not forgetting that we still have to do a lot of homework. So this kind of differentiation, I think, is, at least for me, quite important.
Yeah, I mean, we're from the dystopian future society. So the question is, for the next big thing that comes, for the next virus, you think this is a good base we're working on? With where only little details, like, I mean, I'm just talking about the app. Of course,
right.
Mars and all the rest of the shit has to be done, no question about that. But maybe the next virus works a little different. Mm-hmm. And do we have an open source base to build the app for the next plague?
Well, I think we're well equipped now. But I think it's also important to see. I don't know, Kristen, if you want to say something, just maybe three sentences from me. I think it's still not too late to try to avoid the next plague. So maybe we intrude into less areas of animals, which we have not before. Maybe
always the best thing to get rid of problems, not even start them, yes.
Exactly. So maybe we treat our resources more fairly and we treat them like we need them because we actually do need them. So I think those big pictures, right now everyone is in emergency mode with thousands of people dying. But, you know, I think there's quite a connection between the climate breakdown, global warming question and those pandemic things. And I think this is but maybe Kirsten, you want to say something as well to this?
Well, I think it's always important to take a step back and look at the broader picture. With such an app and maybe a next pandemic on the horizon, which we all hope is not the scenario that we will be facing, but is to make sure that if we use our technical tools for contract tracing, that they will go away after the pandemic, that we have measures in place to make them actually go away. And also, in the meantime, to prepare to have technical solutions in a privacy-friendly way, in a way that doesn't infringe into fundamental rights, and that may not be misused, even though maybe if there is a change in government, for example. So it should be something that you can, maybe the user himself can switch off or at least cannot be easily implemented again, not updated, not be mandatory. I think these are quite important questions. And I think in our talk, we have mentioned a couple of issues, of societal issues, that we will have to discuss in the future with pandemic or without. The questions of surveillance, I think, are questions that are to be discussed in a free or in a society that is based on freedom.
Okay, so this is basically the demands that the hackers have since I don't know the 80s. Keep it decentralized, right. Keep it anonymized. Make sure it doesn't get data that doesn't need. And
And I have a suggestion for this dystopian use of this app. I think after this pandemic is over, it will be called the loneliness app, and it will trace your contacts and it will warn you if you have too little contact.
That's very nice thought. Yeah. Okay. So thank you, Kirsten and Rainer.
And thank you so much.
We'll do a little change in the setup, and we'll repeat a talk from Peggy Salop about audibles, which will be on at 16:30, as far as I know. So see you back soon. Bis gleich.